Let's get started then. Last week, one of the major ideas that we dealt with was the idea of prayer as a doctrine of needs. And I was a little concerned, and in discussion with Arlene, I was a little concerned that maybe I hadn't explained it sufficiently, and that maybe the phrase was almost a little bit glib in perhaps the way I had said it, since I didn't really address it perhaps fully. So I just wanted to kind of mention a little further what I meant by that and what Rabbi Soloveitchik means by that. Since, again, the best of what I have to say, anything almost that's really fairly good is always from the Rav. And I think that's always good to start with. So when the Rav talks about the idea of prayer as a doctrine of needs, two places we can look would be the Birchot HaShachar. And if you go through all of the Birchot HaShachar, and again, God willing, eventually we'll be doing that together, you'll see need after need after need after need expressed. In fact, they're excellent that way in terms of understanding them conceptually. And if you go through to the Shemoneh Esrei, as I said last week, again, you'll see in the middle section need after need after need expressed. And the idea that I said in brief was that the Rav pointed out that one needs to have a sense of dependency before one gets up to daven, one gets up to pray. And he even went so far as to say, if you don't have this sense of dependency, you ought not to get up and daven. So what does that mean? And I guess that's really where we're going. So if I tell you that existentially man hangs like a thread, that may not still hit you in a level of understanding what we mean by needs. So let's take it this way. Generally, but not always, women are even more sensitive to the sense of need than man. Than men, I should say, really. Why? Because when you're involved with running a house, when you're involved with raising children, when you're involved with being the psychologist, whether you have the degree or not, okay, to keep your family together and to keep your family happy, you're more sensitive almost naturally and more exposed naturally to the multiplicity of needs and demands that we have. So whether it's parnasa, whether it is shalom bayit, whether it is keeping your children happy together and not angry with one another, whether it's keeping your grandkids happy and listening to their parents and so on and so forth, whatever it is, there's a cacophony of sounds that make up the backdrop of our lives. And those are needs. And prayer speaks to those needs. And that's what I was trying to get across this week. Okay. The next thing we talked about, or one of the topics we talked about last week, was informal prayer. Okay. Tefillah I formalia. Informal prayer. And we talked about that as reigning supreme from the time of Avram Avinu all the way to the time of Ezra HaSofer. It's interesting, by the way, I think I mentioned this last week, the Rambam says, you know, V'kachaya me Moshe ad Ezra HaSofer. But I showed you in the text last week how the word tefillah is found first with Avram Avinu. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I'm not sure why the Rambam mentions Moshe to Ezra HaSofer, but he does. But I'm suggesting very legitimately goes all the way back to Avraham. Okay, with that as a sort of a mini recap of what we did, what I'd like you to do, if you could, please turn to the source booklet that I gave you. And we're going to see the transition from informal prayer to formal prayer. That's the top source. This is the Rambam, Hilchot Tefillah Perek Rishon. Now, I didn't know really everyone's skill levels, so I wanted everyone to feel comfortable. So where I could, When it came, for example, the Rambam, you see there's a translation. That translation is by Rabbi Eliezer Tugar, T-O-U-G-E-R. And both the Hebrew text and the English text comes from Chabad.org. Okay. The next source, it's fairly short, and I think you'll be able to follow even if I translate that. That's going to be the Mishnah in Brachot. I didn't write that out. The following source, however, which is going to be the essential source of our whole evening, is from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, considered to be, just so you know, again, don't get nervous, I'm not a Lubavitcher, this is considered to be one of the most important halachic works ever done. So that's why we're going to go there. But for that one, I personally sat down and translated, and that's the last page, both the back and the front of the very last page, that entire source. So for those of you who are more comfortable following as I go along in the Hebrew translating, and you'd prefer to follow the English, by all means, that's why it's there for you. And if you want to use it as a way to review, you know, all the material, it's there for you. Okay? With that in mind, let's look at that transition from informal prayer to formal prayer. Okay? And what do we mean by formal prayer? So formal prayer is going to be prayer that's written down. It's going to be the transition. The last figure we talked about last week was Chana. It's going to be the transition from Chana to basically some sort of formal prayer, written down prayer that everybody shares. It's a set text, okay? And the question's going to be, why do we have that set text? So here, even before we see the Rambam, and by the way, for those of you who'd like to get a sort of a sense of a date and time, the Rambam Maimonides, 1135 to 1204, okay? Everyone's heard of the Rambam, everyone's studied the Rambam to a certain extent, but it's always good to get a sense of date. I use the date as a sense of knowing where we are on the roadmap of Jewish history. So the dates themselves are, well, I happen to have the kind of mind that remembers them. Not everybody does, but the only reason we're using them is to sense, get a sense of the progression. And it's very important for tonight's shiur as well. So here again, when we look at the Rambam, before we do so, the Rav said this. The Sidur is a response to man's inability to pray. And that's going to, in a sense, be the short form of what the Rambam is about to say. Okay? So let's look at it inside. Hilchot Tefillah, Perek Rishon, this is Halacha Dalet. I'm going to read the Hebrew and translate it, but again, by all means, if you're more comfortable following the English, that's great. So the Rambam says this, Kevin Shagalu Yisrael B'yumei Nevuchadnezzar HaRasha. When Klal Yisrael were put into exile during the time of the evil Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, now, over the word Nebuchadnezzar, whether you're doing it in Hebrew or in English, good idea. Write down 586 BCE. That's not in either of the texts. Okay, so we're looking at about approximately 600 years before the year zero. And that's when the first Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. Okay? It's an important date. So when that happened, Nit Aravu Bipras V'Yavan V'Sha'ar Ha'umot. So at that point, we were dispersed everywhere. We were dispersed to Greece. We were dispersed to Persia. Okay? That's where the, you know, obviously the Babylonian Talmud came about years later. In fact, how many years later approximately? About 1,000. So we were essentially in Babel for about, you know, so actually over 1,000 years. But the intellectual achievement of the Talmud Bavli, that takes place in the very beginning of the 6th century. So in the year 500. So we're going from 586 on the negative side, BCE, to about 500 after the year zero. Okay, and that's a very important period of time. Okay, so we're dispersed there. Okay, and the rest of the nations. V'noldu lehem banim ba'artzot ha'goyim. And we started producing various generations in the lands of the non-Jews. V'otan ha'banim nitbalbalu sifatam. And those children started getting a very confused language. It wasn't Hebrew. It wasn't Greek. It wasn't Persian. It was, as we would say, in Hebrew, an aruvia, or, you know, it was, and in everyday language you'll hear all the time, it was mavubal. It was all confused. Okay? V'hayata safat kol echad v'echad mu'urevet milashona tarbe. It became really like Swahili. Okay? We were Jews almost speaking the what you would call a Jewish Swahili. It was a mixture. Okay? V'kevan shahaya medaber, okay, eno yachol daber kol tzarcho. And when a person would pray, or they would speak, they weren't able to actually represent what their needs were, belashon achat, in one language, ela bishibush, okay, but rather it was all confused. So as we say from Sefer Nechemiah, uvenehem chatzi medaber ashtudit. So, and their children, right, spoke the language which is called Ashdodit, but only half Ashdodit. So it was a little Ashdodit, it was a little Hebrew, maybe they had a few Greek words in it. Ve'ena makirim udaber Yehudit. Okay, it's interesting, he doesn't say Ivrit, but he says Yehudit. You know, when I was growing up, somebody would speak to me in Yiddish. I didn't come from a Yiddish-speaking home. So I didn't know Yiddish. And so people would say to me, you don't understand Jewish? Right? But look at the word that the Rambam uses. Ve'ena makirim odaver Yehudit. They didn't know how to speak Jewish. And this is the Rambam again in the 12th century. So it obviously became a phrase that people use. So they didn't know how to speak in a Jewish way. U'kalashon am va'am. Okay, instead they spoke according to this mixture of all these other places. Because of this, kashahaya echad mahem mitpalel tiksar l'shona l'shol chafatzav. And as a result, when somebody would daven, their language would become very shortened, and they didn't know how to express their needs. And by the way, what did we talk about at the very beginning of this year? Needs. Look, of all the things the Rambam could have focused upon regarding tefillah, look what he says, right? That they weren't able to ask their needs. Oh, lahagid shavach, or give praise. But what comes first? Needs. So right away, you can see while so much of what my Rebbe did was very unusual and revolutionary, conceptually, spiritually, and so forth. What you see here is that his emphasis on the idea of needs, the doctrine of needs, okay, you see right away that's already found in the Rambam. Okay? Or he wasn't able to express praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'lashon HaKodesh. So, by the way, this is the second way of referring to Ivrit. First, Yehudit. Second, Lashon HaKodesh. Interesting, all in the same Rambam. Okay? Ad she'aravu ima l'shanot acherot. Okay, so, a little bit, it's a cholent. It's an etymological cholent. A little bit of Hebrew, a little bit of Ashdodit, a little bit of Persian, right? V'kevan shira'a Ezra uveit dino. And when Ezra and his Bet-Din saw this, and who, again, we already made reference to this last week. Who was Ezra Ubeit Dino? The man, the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. So it's always very important to realize that change takes place primarily because of need. Okay? And it's, don't think for a moment that the Anshei Knesset Gedolah sat down one day and said, no, wouldn't it be a great idea? Let's have prayer. Let's have formal prayer. Enough of informal prayer. No. As we pointed out last week, that's another 1,000-year period of informal prayer. So the Ezra of Beit Dino don't establish formal prayer until the need is manifest. And that's what the Rambam says. The Kevan Shira Ezra of Beit Dino, Kach Amdu V'tiknu Lahem Shmone Esrei Brachot Al HaSeder. That's what happened. Informal prayer was failing. People couldn't do it correctly anymore. So, as a result, there was a need, there was a manifest need, and Ezra and his Beit Din arose, and that's what they did. They created the Shmoneh Esrei. Shalosh Rishonot Shevach, just like we have today. And by the way, it doesn't matter with whom you daven, the first three brachot are 99.9999% the same, no matter where you daven. I don't care, it's Tamami, it's Rome, it's Brazil, it's going to be the same. The Shalosh Rishonot Shevach LaHashem, U'Shalosh Achronot Hodiah, and the last three are going to be praise. Those last three are going to be a little bit different depending on the community you're with, but they're almost always the same. Where do you have your changes, everyone? Emtziot. Okay, so if you daven with Eidot HaMizrach, it's going to be the same chatima, it's going to be the same conclusion of the bracha, but it's going to be a little bit different each time. So, Yesh Behem Sheilat Kol HaDevarim Shehein Kamo Avot L'chol Chafsei Ish V'Ish. So what happens is that the middle 13 become, if you will, the fundamental basis. And Rambam uses the word avod. It means sort of like the general categories to ask all of the needs of a person. So again, what's the Rambam focusing on when he's talking about prayer? Need. It's the second time we have that word need in one halacha. Again, that's the reason that underscores the Rav's emphasis on the idea of need. Okay, whether it's chavsei ish v'ish, the needs of each and every individual, ulet sorchei hatzibur, and for the needs of the community, which is why we daven, right, in the plural, Shema Kaleinu, Hashem Elokeinu, etc. Kulan kedei shiyu aruchot b'fi hakol. All this is so everybody had an even playing field. Everybody had the same words to say. V'yilmedu otan, and everybody would learn them. V'tehi tefilat elu he'alagim tefilat shlema ketefilat ba'alei halashon. And therefore, what would happen is you have a transformation. The tefillah of these people who beforehand didn't have a voice, okay? They didn't have a voice. Suddenly, they have a perfect tefillah as if they themselves were Hebraicists. And that's why we have the Siddur. It's an amazing thing, okay? And what kind of language do we have? Halashon Hatzacha. The language is clear. It's beautiful. Okay? Umibnei inyan zeh. And because of this, tiknu kol habrachot v'hatefilot mesudarot b'fi kol Yisrael. And now, this is, if you will, the punchline. Says the Rambam, this is why the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah established all the blessings and all of the prayers in an orderly fashion, b'fi kol Yisrael, so that everyone could have it, k'dei shiyei ha'inyan kol bracha aruch b'fi he'aleg, in order that everyone who heretofore didn't really have a clear voice in tefillah, now everyone's got a voice. That's the reason for formal prayer. Okay? He'aleg. Aleg means someone incapable of speaking in a coherent fashion. It's an unusual word. Okay, he uses it. He says a phrase here. Rabbi Tugar says, "Unable to express himself." Okay, but in a sense, like it really means to be unable to speak in a coherent manner. But that's a little bit awkward to use as a translation. That's why I spoke it this way and presented it this way. Okay, any questions on this? Does everyone, in a sense, have a feel? It's very important that I want you to get this feeling of the revolutionary character of what the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah did. Okay, so if you don't mind, I'm going to repeat your question because there's a number of people listening on the internet, as you will be, God willing, short order too, when you go back to Israel. So the question was, what exactly did the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah do? Okay? So the short answer is that they established the entire order of prayer as you and I understand it. Okay? Certainly the Shemona Esrei was quite formal. Okay? Every aspect and every part of the Psukhi Zimra and so forth, there are significant differences as to how that's done. And when it's done, how it's done, the brachot, okay, before the Shema and after the Shema and all that, it's already mentioned in the Mishnah, but of course the Mishnah is much later than the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, much later. The Mishnah is the beginning of the 3rd century, and we're going to be seeing that shortly as well. Okay, so it's a very good question. In terms of the brachot, in other words, I pick up an apple and I say, Borei Pri HaEitz. Okay, that's Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Otherwise, what would I say? Brachat HaHashem, HaBorei Kol Chafsei Adam, UBemiyuchad HaPri HaZeh, and so on and so forth. You know, I mean, that's really very nice, but the question might very well ask, okay, so you can do that, okay, and she can do that, but what about the little kid who's 5 years old? What are they going to do? Okay? So that's why everything was said. It's a good, very, very good question. Okay? Any other questions?
So the answer, again, is that everything that's now in the Siddur, from Brachot through Shemona Esrei through beyond, I don't know.
Right.
Was Anshei Knesset HaGedolah?
Right. But the key is that you do have a hitpatchut. You do have a continuous evolving. I hesitate in many circles to use the word evolution. It's scary for a lot of people, but I can say the Siddur evolves. Okay, a lot of people would be very, very comfortable to say the Art Scroll Siddur that you and I use today, okay, is exactly what the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah came up with, but it's not true. It's not true. Any more than the Vilna Shas, the beautiful Vilna Shas that many of us have in our homes, you know, that is one version of Gemara. You know, Abaye and Rava didn't go to Vilna in the 18th century and say, well, what did I say? Okay, it evolved, it grew. Okay, that's an important idea. So the Siddur evolved and grew. But I would say this, the underpinning, okay, the fundamental basis of our Siddur, without any doubt, yes, that's Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Great question. Okay? All right. Now, the next question that we're going to come to is the question, and it's actually, I guess I would say, shi'ur driven. A lot of you asked me last week, and I gave a very quick answer, about the status of women and tefillah. What do we mean when we talk about women and tefillah? So the simple question, which of course doesn't have a simple answer, the simple question is, are women obligated in tefillah? That's the question. And if women are obligated in tefillah, does that mean women are obligated in formal prayer? Does that mean that women are obligated in informal prayer? And that question is really a subset of a bigger question. One of the most famous arguments between the Ramban and the Rambam. The Ramban is 1194 to 1270. So as you can see right away, he's after the Rambam. Okay? And he's in a different period. He's really in the 13th century is when he reaches his intellectual zenith, whereas the Rambam is the century before. Okay, so the Rambam and the Ramban have this major, mega machloket as to the status of tefillah. A few weeks ago, I was zocha with my wife Arlene. We had lunch over by Sue, and I discussed this on Shabbat. We discussed this question, and I, at the risk of repetition for both of you, I'm going to go through it a little bit. Okay, what's going on? There's a machloket. First of all, I told you who the Baalei machloket are, the people that are arguing. What are they arguing about? You ready? Rambam, Maimonides, says tefillah is a mitzvah min ha-Torah. It's part of Tariag mitzvot. Okay, and we're going to be seeing that actually in Kahati. This is Kahati's Mishnayot. This is what the version I'm using here for the Mishnah. We're going to see that very clearly stated in Rav Kahati's Perush. Okay, the Ramban, however, says that tefillah is a mitzvah midrabanan. It's a rabbinic mitzvah. Okay? Now, the Ramban, in following that position, is really following the 9th century work of the Bahag. Some of you have heard these names, so it's good to finally know who they were. Bahag is the Baal Halachot Gedolot. It's an anonymous sefer written in Bavel in the 9th century. It becomes one of the most important halakhic works of all time. Okay? Not the most halakhic, most important, but one of the most. And the Bahag held that tefillah was midrabanan, not minat Torah. So what you have, really, is a culture kampf. You've got a battle. Do we go with the Rambam? And I haven't explained the machloket yet, which I will in a moment. But do we go with the Rambam, who breaks away from the position of the Bahag, that had held sway for, by the time of the Ramban, 4 centuries? Okay. Do we go with the Bahag, or do we go with the Rambam, who breaks away? The Ramban is conservative. Don't get nervous. Small c. The Ramban is conservative. And he says the Bahag has, in a sense, reigned supreme until now. And that's the approach we should continue to take. And therefore, tefillah is derabanan. The Rambam breaks away from that and he says, no, it's minat Torah. With that as an introduction, let's then look at the machloket a little bit. Machloket goes like this. The Rambam says that tefillah is min ha-Torah because man continuously faces tzara. He faces, as your grandmother would have said, or maybe you grew up in a home that said this, faces tzuras. Man continuously faces challenges, certainly anxieties, to use the kind of terminology from the Rav, existential challenges, continuously. Okay? And we know what they are. Their health, their pranasa, their shiduchim, their despondency, their psychological challenges that we all face. Okay? There's relationship issues. Okay. Everybody has their own pechel. Everyone's got their own pechel. Everyone's got their own bag of tricks. And as the famous story goes, nobody wants anybody else's. Okay? Because at least we know what our problems are. Okay? So the Rambam said, since man is faced with this existential challenge and set of existential challenges every single day of his or her life, therefore every single day, and again, this is all according to Rav Soloveitchik, every single day of a person's life, there's a mitzvah to pray. The Ramban, Nachmanides, said something quite different. He said that basically, tzara, tzuris, is what we would say in Hebrew, achadim achadim. It's once in a while. It's catastrophe. Okay? Lo aleinu. Lo aleinu, except for Davida, every one of us in the room has lost someone. Or either a friend or a family member. Please God, not you, Davida. Okay, because you're young. Okay? But everyone else. So that would be a catastrophe. Those of us who have lived through it, those of us who have sat Shiva, those of us who have gotten the initial news and so on and so forth, it's a catastrophe. Okay? A tsunami is a catastrophe. A hurricane, you know, natural events. Lo aleinu, I won't look at anyone when I say it. Ploni ben Ploni gets bad news about a medical test. I close my eyes on purpose so as not to make anyone feel uncomfortable. Okay? These are catastrophes. Okay? There's an operation in progress. What do? Every one of us takes that Sefer Tehillim. Okay? We're davening. So the Ramban says that Sara is not a permanent, ongoing, daily condition of man. But rather, for him, says Rav Soloveitchik, we look at Sara as something that is catastrophic in nature. Okay? So, in summary, and this is really important, this is a tremendously important hashkafic idea, okay, really that you can take with you the rest of your lives. Okay, do we look at tefillah as an answer to our daily existential needs? So it's a daily doctrine of needs, or do we look at tefillah and do we look at tefillah like the Ramban says? No, it's a time of tzara. By the way, I just want to and catastrophe. I just want to mention one thing, and I said this briefly last week, but with the Yamim Noraim coming upon us, it's very important. Even the Ramban looks at Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur as a mitzvah min haTorah to daven. Because if you really know about Rosh Hashanah is, okay, and you're fortunate enough that you're out of looking at Rosh Hashanah as just apples dipped in honey and the sounding of the shofar. Okay, I mean, there's a lot of people, that's where they're at. You know that, I know that. But if you get a sense of what Rosh Hashanah is, says the Ramban, this is a great time of tzara. Hashem, certainly when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, is Yoshev Al-Kisei Hadin. So the great paradox, of course, is that most Jews think that the most serious day of the year is what? Yom Kippur. They got it reversed. What's the most serious day of the year? It's Rosh Hashanah. The most challenging day of the year is Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Which is why there's all kinds of things we try not to do in Rosh Hashanah, such as we try not to sleep, even if we're not enamored by the drasha. We in the case of mostly guys, this would affect, we don't drink schnapps. Okay? It's inappropriate. Your whole life is hanging in the balance. So says the Ramban, it's a great time of tzara. Okay. With that in mind, let's go on to our next source. Now we understand the machloket regarding what tefillah itself is. Now the question is, are women obligated in tefillah? And like I said before, if they are obligated in tefillah, what kind of tefillah? And for those of you who have heard me speak before, I can tell you very honestly, the answer goes like this. It depends upon whom you ask. Because we're going to see that just like there's a machloket between the Rambam and the Ramban in terms of the nature of tefillah, that's going to actually translate into a very fascinating difference in terms of are women obligated or not obligated in formal prayer. Okay, let's see that inside. So our oldest source, and I'm on the second page, which looks like this, everyone. Our oldest source is the Mishnah in Brachot, the third parak, Mishnah Gimel. Okay, and I think I went through and I put a dot next to everybody's to make it easy to find. Okay, so it says, Nashim v'avadim uketanim, paturim mekriyat shma, uminat tefilin. Women and slaves, don't get all worried and upset. Slaves, which refer in this case to non-Jewish slaves, have the same degree of obligation of women. Which, not that women should be misperceived as being slave-like, but rather it's that slaves have the same level of obligation as women. Okay? Which means, of course, as almost all women that would be in our shul know, that means that they're not obligated in a mitzvah taseh shasman grama, in a time-bound positive commandment. Why? Because a slave's time is not his own. Okay? And in general, a woman, okay, with the multifaceted obligations, okay, can't always be involved with a time-bound positive commandment. She can be, and by the way, for Ashkenazi women, when they do a time-bound positive commandment, do say a bracha. Sephardic women do not, following the Rambam. So, for example, if you take the lulav and etrog, you say a bracha. Okay? A Sephardic woman would not. She's proscribed from doing so. Because why? She's completely not obligated in the mitzvah. And so by the Sephardim, they say, if she's not obligated in the mitzvah, she can't say the bracha. We follow Rabbeinu Tam, who maintains that since a woman may do a mitzvah d'aseh shezman grama, therefore she may say the bracha as well. Okay, so you already got the gist here. Why are Nashim Avedim or Ketanim not obligated in Kriyat Shema and Tefillin? Because the mitzvah taseh shezman grama. They're time-bound positive commandments. But here's our key. V'chayavim b'tefillah, they're obligated in tefillah. Now, right away, whether we know very much at all in terms of background, obligated in tefillah. So what we're now going to know automatically, somehow tefillah is different than kriyat shema and tefillin. We're going to see what that means in a moment. But a woman is obligated in tefillah, in mezuzah, okay? A mezuzah for sure is not a mitzvah taseh shasman grama. Or birkat hamazon, for sure it's not a mitzvah taseh shasman grama. Okay? So do women bench? For sure. Do women have mezuzot? For sure. Okay? But interestingly enough, it's the Mishnah who states right away that women are obligated in tefillah. And of course, what's the question of the moment? What question are you going to ask?
Which tefillah?
And the big one that our 2-year-old and 3-year-old grandkids ask. Endlessly. Why? Why? And that's what we're going to explore. Okay? So again, time period of the Mishnah, beginning of the 3rd century. Who is the collator of the Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Okay? Notice very carefully I said collator. Right? He's not the author. Because what he did is he gathered together diverse sources that go back in some instances before the year zero. He gathered them all together. He was machaber. He grouped them together. He collated them, turned it into a literary composition called the Mishnah. And as one of my rebbes once called the Mishnah, it was the 3rd century Shulchan Aruch. That's what it was. That's what it was. Okay? Until that point, rabbinic literature, Torah Shel Baal Peh, was not written down. There was a proscription to write down Torah Shel Baal Peh. Now, it's written down. Why does Rebbe write it down in the beginning of the 3rd century? Because he was very afraid that it would be lost forever. By the time of the 3rd century, the 2nd century, the 200s, you have the rise of who? The Christians. Okay? This is the so-called, in quotation marks, intertestamental period between the true Torah and the falsehoods of Christianity, which they call the Gospel. Okay, this is that period of time. And at this point you have the Christians, the Jewish Christians, are slowly but surely moving away from the word Jewish, moving into being straight Christians. Okay, this tremendous amount of tension, this tremendous amount of enmity by the part of the Jewish Christians, where again the emphasis becomes the word Christian. And they're starting to cause a lot of trouble for us. Which is why, by the way, what bracha was added, according to most scholars? Right? The 19th bracha. Probably, but not definitely, because of the rise of the Christians. Because what's the name of the bracha? If you look in the Art Scroll Siddur, what's it called? Birkat HaMinim. Right? The bracha of the deviants. Okay? And it's not a praiseworthy run. You know, they're not saying, aren't the deviants terrific people? It's pumfaker. Right? It's exact opposite. Okay? So much so that, just a little bit of history here, by the 4th century, okay, in the year 325, you have the Council of Nicaea, which is the first Christian conference. And in that year, not that long, 125 years after the Mishnah. So you can see how prescient, okay, how far-reaching Rebbe's reach was. He knew that we were in trouble. So a mere 100 years after Rebbe, the Christians have a total, complete break with Judaism. Complete. The Sabbath is no longer Shabbat. It's Sunday. Okay? Jews, and this was, by the way, Rahman al-Islam, this was picked up by the Nazis, what I'm going to tell you right now. Jews have to suddenly start wearing distinctive clothing. Okay? It was now prohibited for Christians to go to mikvah. Because we have, in Eretz Yisrael, okay, archaeological evidence of mikvahot that were used specifically for Jewish Christians. Right, mikvahot with the sign of the fish on them. They're there. I mean, you can see them with your own eyes. Because we didn't want them coming to use our services and facilities because they believed in Yashka. Okay? So all these different rules and regs came into effect, including things more or less similar in kind to the yellow star, funny hats, all right, and all the whole nine yards. That was the Council of Nicaea. Okay. That's why the Mishnah is written. With that in mind, now you've got a background for the Mishnah, and you understand what Rebbe did and why he did it. So let's look at that expression on the bottom of the page. I always thought it was interesting. Anyone notice the Hebrew number here? In this particular Mishnah of Kahati, what is it? Chav Chet. What's Chav Chet in Hebrew? Koach. Interesting, right? I always thought that was interesting. Because we're going to talk about the power of prayer for women and their special koach. Here's what the Gati says. What Gati says is, notice where I put the brackets in everybody on the bottom of the page? So he says, v'chayavim b'tefillah, that women are obligated in tefillah. So, notice the approach. The first approach the Kahati is going to bring down is that of the Ramban. B'tefilat Shmona Esrei. What kind of prayer are we talking about, everyone? Formal prayer. Okay? Sheha tefilah b'kashat rachamim. Because tefilah is the request for mercy. V'cho adam tzarich levakesh rachamim al atzmo. And everybody has to ask rachamim, whether they're men or they're women. Okay? And the source there is our Gemara and the Rishalmi. Talmud Rishalmi, okay, was written in the 4th century. Okay? And again, now everybody play historical Sherlock Holmes. When's the Council of Nicaea? 325. When's the Talmud Rishalmi written? 4th century. Why is it written? Because things have gotten even worse than in the time of Rebbe. Okay? Things are really bad. So the Talmud Yerushalmi is written as a response to OMG, we are going to lose all the Gemara that we have so far on the Mishnah. So the Talmud Yerushalmi precedes the Bavli. Okay? What your husband or what you've seen or you've studied yourself, namely what we just simply call Shas. And that's the 6th century in Bavel. Okay? Now, how does Rashi explain it? Let's see what he says. Rashi mefaresh ha'ta'am. Rashi explains the reasoning. Shit ha'tefilah ha'takana chachamim hi. That tefilah was a takana the chachamim. Namely who? That's why I gave you all the background. Ezra and the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. V'tignua afla nashim. And says Rashi HaKodesh. Rashi, by the way, if you want to keep all the dates going, 1040 to 1105. Okay. Rashi says that at the time that the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah established tefillah in a set text, established it for women. That's Rashi. Pretty powerful, right? Ulechinuch banim. And for children. Children, as everybody knows, and many of you have far more contact with young children than I ever did. Okay, even though I was zochet to help in a small way raise 4 children. Okay, but children have a tendency to be very what? Self-absorbed. Right? Children have a sense, okay, that the world spins around them. Some of these children remain children their entire lives. And they become adults that feel the same way, as we all know. But that's what children feel. So, what better way than to teach them how to daven in the plural? As long as you're teaching them davening, to show them there's more than you. There's more than you. That's why it's so beautiful. Alright? So all that, guys, everything till now really fits beautifully with who? The Ramban. Now you see how all the pieces are coming together, I hope. Aval, ready? Harambam Kotev. The Rambam wrote. And here you'll see exactly the words, which is why I didn't go through the translation on this particular part. I figured I'd just translate it very quickly here. Mitzvah taseh lehitpalel b'chol yom. It's a positive commandment to daven each and every day. You all know now why. Right? We talked about the existential needs that are part of man's daily existence. Shneamar, and the Rambam uses a pasuk from Sefer Shemot. Ve'avadatem et Hashem Elokeichem, and you will serve the Lord your God. Mepi Hashemua, based on Torah Shabbat Peh, based on rabbinic interpretation, what is ve'avadatem et Hashem Elokeichem? Lamdu, they learned, this is all again from the Rambam, she'avodah zu hi tefillah, that the worship, that the avodah, the work, the worship here in this instance, does not refer to the korbanot, right? Which we talk about the avodah in the Beit HaMikdash, but, says the Rambam, this is talking about tefillah. She'ne'amar, ula'avdo v'chol v'avachem. You will serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, worship Hashem, with all of your heart. This is a pasuk from Devarim. As I pointed out last week, all of your heart in rabbinic parlance, rabbinic language, does not mean just your heart, although that's important. The affective component in tefillah is huge. But heart, lev, always refers to cognitive as well. It's not just affective, emotional, but cognitive. So, Amru Chachamim, Ezo hi avoda shabalev, zu tefillah. What are we talking about when we use the expression avoda shabalev? That's tefillah. Now, you ready? Vein. Now, this I talked about last week, but it's a good idea again from the Rambam. Vein la tefillah zaman kavua min haTorah. There's no times from the Torah. And therefore, what kind of prayer is the Rambam talking about? Being an obligation, min haTorah? Informal prayer. Everybody, says the Rambam, is obligated in informal prayer. By the way, based on the Rambam so far, you ready? What do you think the psak of the Rambam is regarding women? Yes, women are obligated. Women are obligated in tefillah. But what kind of tefillah, everybody? Informal tefillah. And that's the halacha until today. For who? Sephardic women. That's the halacha for Sephardic women. Okay. Now, I should say something very, very important. When you're chasing after little children, when you're involved with the absolute 24/7 taking care of a newborn, and you, all of you know what that means even better than I do. When you're doing that, you really can't say to the screaming baby, excuse me, I have to daven Shemoneh Esrei. Okay, you can't do that. Okay? It's the third or fourth week, your husband goes to work, and there's no babysitter, it's you. You're everything. Okay, you really can't say to the kid, I'm sorry, you know. So, at that point in time, it's generally viewed that even Ashkenazi women can, in a sense, in quotation marks, get by saying, say, Moda Ani, after Netilat Yadayim, and things like that. But in others, than those kinds of situations, where a woman has, an Ashkenazi woman, has to be involved with the incredible physical needs of an infant, or God forbid, someone who's really, really ill, lo aleinu. Other than that, a woman, as we're going to see further, maybe not this week, we'll do the psak next week in its entirety, bli neder, okay, an Ashkenazi woman is obligated in formal prayer. So here's the interesting thing. You have two Sfardim. You have the Rambam, Maimonides, and you have the Ramban, Nachmanides. Based upon the Rambam, okay, women are obligated min haTorah in tefillah, but it turns out to be informal prayer. For a Nachmanides, for the Ramban, women are obligated rabbinically, okay, to daven. Now, if they're obligated rabbinically to daven, what kind of tefillah is that? Formal prayer. Okay? And I'm just giving you a hint about what we're going to see next week. And that's, we as Ashkenazim and Ashkenazi women follow another Sfardi, not the Rambam, follow the Ramban, who obligates women in formal tefillah. And therefore, the last words here that we'll say here, in Kahati, ulefichach, nashim v'avadim chayavim b'tefillah. Women and slaves are obligated in tefillah. Lefishihi mitzvah taseh, because it is a positive commandment. Shelo hazman grama, since the times are not set, okay, by the Torah. Now, some of you right away will say, but Rabbi, it is a time-bound commandment, according to the Anshei Knesset Gadol, to daven, shacharit, mincha, and we'll talk about next week as well, perhaps Ma'ariv. Those have set times. So, aren't they a mitzvot aseh shazman grama, and therefore shouldn't a woman be patura? Okay, so the answer to that and the essence of the Mishnah, according to the Ramban, is, you know what? Why was it established for women? And why, again, Ashkenazi women, why do our women daven the set tefillot and so forth at specific times? Because the mitigating factor, if you will, confounding factor to the whole argument of mitzvot aseh she'asma grama is, as Rashi points out, as the Gemara points out, rachamim. So it's sort of like you've all heard in rabbinic conversation, enachanami, you're right. It's a mitzvot aseh she'asma grama on the rabbinic level. You're right. And women should have been patura. But the Mishnah obligates them because of the need to express rachamim. Okay? With this, we're going to stop in terms of the formal presentation. We're going to go on next week, Bli Neder. We're going to go on next week to look at the actual psak, and we're going to look at several different sources. We're going to go back to visit my Rebbe's Torah of Soloveitchik. I have a great deal of material, and as Arlene likes to say, it's always good to prepare more than what you have to share. So, at this point, any questions? It's a good time to ask your questions.
I just have a question. So, what you just said, that
yes.
It was from Rachamim. You mean Hashem is coming from Rachamim? What do we say? What do you mean by Rachamim?
We need Rachamim.
Oh, okay.
We need Rachamim.
Okay, so this is the reason, even though it's, some people could argue it's not Rachamim.
Right.
Okay.
See, the interesting thing for the Rambam, tefillah is mina Torah, right, which is what he talks about. It is not a mitzvah aseh she'asma grama. But he says it explicitly. For the Ramban, who looks at tefillah definitionally, since it goes back to the set tefillah of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, tefillah is rabbinically a mitzvah aseh she'asma grama. No question about it. But again, the factor is our need for rachamim. Okay? Great question. Anybody else? Yes, Davida.
I have one question. Could you just repeat what Rav Soloveitchik said about the sitter at the beginning?
Oh, sure. So the question, I'm just going to repeat the question for people that will be listening on the internet. And by the way, the source is on the source sheet. I hope everyone got all the different things I handed out today. Okay, so the question was, what did the Rav say about the Sidur? So basically, the Rav said that the Sidur is a response to our inability to pray. That if we could have, and in light of the Shir tonight, if we could have had the ability to continue to informally express our needs, wants, desires, and so forth in a clear way, then the Anshei Knesset Gadol never would have created the Sidur. So the paradox is, the Sidur is our response to our inability to pray. And that's what the Rav said. In the same context, when the Rav said that, it was noted by many people that when the Rav began his analysis of tefillah, going all the way back to 1959, very early on, and perhaps even earlier, one of the things that was said about the Rav is that the Rav took the Sidur out of the hands of the Gabbai and put it into the hands of the Talmud Chacham. Okay? And I'm trying to share that with you in my own limited way. Okay? Very well. Thank you so much for coming and have a terrific rest of the week.
Not to be sarcastic, but you say it's informal to the woman because he's a little confused, busy, and overwhelmed. The person says, please, Hashem, help me get through that.